Greetings, citizens of Earth. You are barking a happy tune with my pal Smurf of Smurf and the Magic Tones on 5280 Geek.
Live from the Figgis Studios is Weekend Geek Update. Your host, me, Smurf, the one and only. Hope this finds you well after an extended weekend. Thanksgiving is behind us, and now Christmas is looming so, so close. Our sponsor also hopes this finds you well, Suzy Q's, who is the maker of some incredible jewelry, something you may want to consider for Christmas. She did just post up these amazing-looking earrings with Swarovski crystals in them, and oh my god, I was like, those are hot. Those are some impressive earrings. Check her out on SuzyQs.com. She also has a Instagram where she posts a lot of her works and wares on there as well. And her Facebook, she's normally at a lot of the cons, but with everything going on, she has been stuck at home. And I'm sure her online sales have doubled over what they normally do because no one can go out, and that's the only way to buy anything, it seems like, these days. Go and check her out. We love Suzy. She's an amazing talent and some impressive stuff. Red swears by her earrings that she has of hers, and yeah, they're pretty impressive. So there you go. Check her out. Christmas looming. It's December. Holy crap. What happened? Well, you know what? It's a good thing. Everyone is just working to just get through the end of this year. Let's just put 2020 behind us. On to bigger and better things, right? 2021. They'll just make an apocalyptic movie out of 2020. It's perfect. There's just a commercial that I saw with Michael J. Fox in it, and the rapper is a time traveler, of course, and Michael J. Fox at the end says, yeah, don't go anywhere near 2020. Yeah, it's kind of funny. So there you have it. Also, speaking of commercials, the huge feud, I can't even say it's huge. It's more like tongue-in-cheek, kind of playful ribbing that goes back and forth because we know they're friends. But Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman have this ongoing thing back and forth and making fun of each other and putting themselves in embarrassing moments. But the latest commercial between the two of them, having them standing, you know, side by side while they're talking about their perspective products, of course, Jackman's coffee and Reynolds's aviation gin. So at the end, of course, Jackman gets his shots in and against a sheepish looking Ryan Reynolds, and at the end, Ryan Reynolds' mom pops in and just is totally on Jackman's side, and it's actually really funny. If you haven't watched it, I know it's on their Twitter accounts. You just need to go watch it because it's just really like, wow, shots fired. And of course, Jackman's final words is, "Yeah, and she's staying with me." If Jackman's taking in guests, I'll put my hand up. Take me in, please. I want to live with you. That would be fun. I can be Jackman's adopted child. Baby Wolverine. It'll be fun. Check it out on their Instagram or Twitter, pardon me. Their Twitter. I know it went everywhere. It went viral pretty quick. And Jackman does do a lot of good causes with his coffee, and he goes into the explanation of it much, much better than I'm going to, because it's his coffee, his passion, and it's where it should be. And the aviation gin is actually really, really tasty. I mean, I don't know if I'd put it up against, like, Nolet's or anything, but, I mean, for what it is, I really enjoyed trying it out. I didn't make a martini with it. I just did like a I'm not going to go into it. That's something I will save actually for an upcoming episode. Dun dun dun. Ooh. something like a trailer? No, nothing like a trailer. But just it's coming. Don't worry. I got you covered. Anyway, check it out. Aviation gin, worth a try. Noletz is like top shelf. That's a great gin. Really enjoy Noletz. So there you go. Little peek into the liquor cabinet. What else is going on? So with the Thanksgiving weekend, all sorts of weirdness going on. Of course, if you haven't watched it yet, Showtime did premiere on Thursday, 1917, which is an incredible film. Oh my God. I was trying to notice when they finally did the first break, because it's all one continuously shot scene for like the first 45 minutes. And you know, they're going through the trenches. They go into no man's land, and I mean that whole sequence is just absolutely mind blowing. The whole story itself, it's a bit of a rehash, but for all intents and purposes, this film is just spectacular. I was in awe of it, and I was eagerly awaiting to see it. I didn't get a chance to see it in the theaters, and I would rather have seen it on my system, especially with all the war explosions and surround elements that I have come to enjoy from my home system better than some of the theaters. So, but the elements and everything in this film are just so intricately woven, and it is just immersive that you are just, oh. And the soldier, he just pissed me the hell right off. This guy has, if you want to look at a series of bad decisions and just shake your head like, what the hell is this guy thinking? This is that film. This is the one where you're sitting there like, what are you doing? How did you survive this long? So, take that for what you will. But it is really worth watching. Don't get me wrong. I know it's on Showtime right now. If you subscribe to the cable channels, I'm sure it's streaming somewhere in addition to, you can purchase it, I'm sure, on Amazon and all the whatnot. But if you're like me and you just want to watch it, this is the best way. Great film. Holy crap. So, check it out. Let me know your thoughts. I'd be curious to find out what you walked away with it, because good Lord, it's just immersive. So intense. What else? Oh, and you know, also for Thanksgiving, it's really weird, the whole Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade when there's nobody there. I mean, it's like watching how pathetic the NFL has kind of turned into with, you know, nobody, no fans allowed in, no one in the stands. It's limited. I mean, here in Denver, of course, you know, we've got the South Park characters that are still taking up residents in the south stands, but because of everything going on, nobody's going, and it's just weird. And I think as a rule for a parade, you need people there for a parade. You really do. I mean, it's great that you can, you know, look at the balloons and everything going by, but half of the thrill is the people there in the stands and the energy that you get from it. So, I mean, I understand circumstances as they are, but come on. Really? I think there would have been a better approach. It was just kind of a letdown. Like, really? This is what we've come to? I think a year without the parade probably would have been better than what we saw. There was some cool stuff. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I love looking at the balloons and all of that, but I mean, you can pretty much, we'll put it on fast forward, and if you recorded it and get it done in 10 minutes. Really, that's kind of about it, or something along those lines. But it's just so strange. But, you know, these are the trying times we live in. What else from a geek standpoint that caught my eye? Not a lot else caught it, just regular stuff, except for the news, which we'll go into. But all in all, of course, The big news everyone's talking about, of course, is Mandalorian. Now, we will deal a little bit with the recent episode. So if you haven't watched it, I do apologize. Spoilers may be inbound if you haven't watched it. But we'll avoid all of the Baby Yoda stuff. Because the one key point that I want to focus in on is what we get at the end of the episode. Of course, Rosario Dawson doing Ahsoka is probably one of the best interpretations I could possibly have imagined. Rosario Dawson, just total top shelf performance. Like, holy crap. If a cartoon was going to come to life, besides Katie Sackhoff, of course, as Bo-Katan, there is Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka Tana. I mean, holy moly. Just put it all out there. Left it all on the court. One of the best episodes so far. And, well, for this season anyway. I can't say so far, because there are a couple in the first season that were great. Timothy Oliphant, of course, his episode right there as well, especially bringing another character from the expanded universe into the fold, into canon. So to see all of this, but I'm not surprised, especially with Dave Filoni involved, and, you know, Rebels was his baby, so to bring these characters into The Mandalorian really doesn't come as that big of a surprise. But what the big surprise was at the end, when Ahsoka basically says, "Where is Grand Admiral Thrawn?" Now, Thrawn is not Filoni's creation. It's actually author Timothy Zahn, who, right around 1991, I believe it was, created Thrawn as the next new baddie in Heir to the Empire. So basically, it's a three-book series that Zahn wrote. Yeah, it was back in 1991. Basically, he was the last Grand Admiral. He wasn't a Moff like Tarkin or what's his name, but he was just as a badass. And what Filoni did for him in Rebels is pretty much the most accurate depiction of the novels that you can imagine, because how Thrawn's character was built was how he could basically was a tactical genius, just based off of watching someone's art or interpreting how a person thinks and what their moves would be based on their artwork and how they represent themselves in the creative side. So the man was a master tactician, and in the book he took down Ackbar pretty heavy-handedly, just without a doubt. And you see that kind of aspect in Rebels as far as just how he functions, how tactical he is. So to have him brought into the fold for Mandalorian is huge. So is he working with Moff Gideon? Is he what's the deal? How does this play out? There's so many questions. But the big question is, when are we going to see it? I'm betting we're not going to see this probably until season 3. And you're not going to go through this big of a clue, this big of a foreboding kind of name drop without already having something in mind or planned. Even Timothy Zahn, everybody like immediately started hitting up his email, his Twitter account of, what can you tell us? Is Zahn back? What is Thrawn back? What's going on? And of course, Timothy's in completely in the dark, and he may or may not be in the dark. I really doubt he is. He's probably just playing stupid, because I couldn't imagine that they wouldn't involve him in some of this creative process as far as his vision for Thrawn. Of course, even after the expanded universe reset when Disney got it, Zahn went back and revisited some of Thrawn's character development, some of the Clone Wars stuff, and everything else along that lines. In addition to, there has been a very impressive comic book series that explained Thrawn's rise of power from him being a recruit all the way up to being, you know, an admiral. And it's a great read. I don't know if you're into the Star Wars comics. There are a ton to choose from, but The Grand Admiral Thrawn series that Marvel did put out was very well thought out and very well plotted and very well just extremely solid story. So, what does that mean for us? It's a great question. I'm glad you asked. The questions are, where does this fit in, of course, with the timeline? Is this before or after Rebels? Because at the end of Rebels, of course, Ahsoka goes out into the Uncharted areas to see if they can find Ezra, and Thrawn, of course, survives, but with this indication. So that means maybe they already know that Ezra and Thrawn are out there. They just don't know where they are. So kind of a big bomb to drop this far into season two. So that's why I think we're going to see more of this for season three, and I would not be surprised if we don't see at least in season three some epic star battle that or space battle that is just what that we haven't even seen yet in Mandalorian. I think that they're just saving this for season three and just absolutely blow our minds as we do the big setup. And I can see that coming. I really, really can. Because just the way that their minds work, I can just see Favreau and Filoni just sitting, drinking whiskey, coming up with ideas of, hey, what about this? Or, hey, how about we do this? I can just see that. Because that's what we do at the comic shop. Just hang out. Okay, maybe not all the time with whiskey. But we do sit around and just kind of just come up with fanboy ideas of things we would like to see. The big difference is they have a budget and Disney backing them saying, okay, well, what do you guys want to do next? Because I don't see them stopping them with any idea that it's going to be bad, that we're going to see a failure. Because, I mean, I think everyone jumped on board with the whole season and the episode, because when you look at what they've given the fans is redemption, hope. I mean, this series is absolutely on fire, and now everyone is talking about different episodes and the chance of getting crossovers and other series started. I mean, there was even an article that I read about them trying to bring a defunct idea that Lucas had as far as focusing in on the underground element and the smugglers and all of that, that Lucas himself had like really thoroughly gone through the paces and had it ready to go. In fact, the guy that plays Captain Cold was going to be from The Flash, was going to be one of the Jedi that were involved in the story. So do I want to see more stuff? I don't know, to be honest with you. I'm really the problem, and it's a slippery slope, because of course everybody wants more, and it gets to a point where there's that saturation, and you're like, well, now there's too much. I think where they're at right now is perfect. It's not too little. Of course, there always can be more. There could be longer episodes. There could be more episodes, but aside from that, I don't know if I want to see more. Of course, Obi-Wan, I definitely want to see that series. And there's a bunch of other rumors as far as the Children of the the Children of the Watch and all of that. I'm not going to get into that because there's just too many holes in a lot of fan theories out there. And based on what I'm pretty confident in what I know, I'm not buying a couple of fan theories that are floating out there. But I really, maybe one more other show to complement Mandalorian, I think would be fine. Just two. Otherwise, you're just going to kill it, and you're going to take away from the specialness of this series and what they're accomplishing and what they're doing. Just let them go. No more shows. Just leave it this. It's perfect. I don't want to mess with it. So yeah, that's my take on that. I don't know. I think two, maybe three more episodes left of the Mandalorian for this season, and then it's fan theories galore and looking out to who shows up for season three. So I'm very, very curious to see where Moff Gideon comes back in. So, anyway, moving on. Also, what premiered this week during the Thanksgiving holiday weekend was the Christmas Chronicles Chapter 2. And, okay, I loved the first one. I'm going out there. I'm just going to put it out there. Kurt Russell as Santa Claus is badass. I loved it, especially when the E Street Band, which is all in jail with him, start like performing. I the only thing that was missing was Bruce Springsteen, and I think that would have just thrown it, because Kurt Russell delivered an incredible performance with the E Street Band, and I was absolutely enamored with the first one. And of course, the teaser at the end of it, we get Goldie Hawn. So now, Christmas Chronicles 2, which kind of picks up a couple of years after the first one, and we visit the North Pole with one of the kids, and of course Goldie is a prominent character in this storyline. It's great. It is a very heartfelt, good Christmas story. And Santa's not, you know, all mushy. He's a little edgy. He's Kurt Russell. Fuck yeah, he's gonna be edgy. He's pushing that limit, and he works. He fits this role, and I can't believe it took this long for him to play Santa. But the sad news is, now this may or may not be true, but according to Chris Columbus, who is the one that has worked with Kurt Russell during this project, has said that Kurt Russell is going to be retiring, and this is like his final role, that he wants to ride on into the sunset after this. And in fact, his quote, and this is from Chris Columbus, not Kurt Russell, which we'll get to in a second. Chris Columbus said, this is directly what he said: "I want to walk into the sunset, this being the last role I play." He wants to continue doing it deep down in his soul. He's committed to this role. That means 8 weeks of growing the beard with little additional flourishes, working with the script every night before he shoots with me. It's an intense commitment, and he takes it very seriously. And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised. None of that surprises me. Because I'm trying to think what year it would have been. But one of the earliest introductions that I had to Kurt Russell was The Computer That Wore Tennis Shoes, a great Disney film from way back in the day, and it was like one of my favorites. And of course, Kurt Russell is the kid that wore the tennis shoes. He's the computer, and it was a fun, and I really loved that. Of course, it's like one of the first things I revisited when Disney Plus came online. And of course, you can't deny the history and the career that Kurt Russell has had. Snakes Blitzkin, of course, Escape from New York, Jack Burton with Big Trouble in Little China, one of my favorite films. I mean, It. I mean, come on, It. The Thing. Yeah, it's another thing. But The Thing being, of course, one of the best horror films from John Carpenter of the time, and it still holds up. And we won't even get into like the you know, wild stuff he's done with Quentin Tarantino on that front. So Kurt Russell, I think, has earned his retirement, but I would be sad to see him go, and rightfully so. The man's been like a benchmark for, you know, the majority of my cinematic life. I don't think there's a film of his that I honestly haven't seen. I mean, even Tango and Cash, him and Stallone is in the video collection right there next to the Lethal Weapon, which I talked about last week. So I mean, it's just, and you can't deny him as Wyatt Earp in freaking Tombstone. I mean, there's just so much he's done. And don't retire, Kurt. We would miss you. The fact of the matter is, if you haven't watched Christmas Chronicles 2, it looks It is great. I don't want to say it looks great. It is great. And I really enjoyed it. I think Rotten Tomatoes on this one has given it a 70 on the tomato scale. I never really put a whole lot of faith in anyone else's judgments, but this is it is good film. Now, the question, of course, everyone is clamoring over, if what Christopher Columbus is saying is true, is Kurt Russell really retiring? Of course, if you look at Russell's IMDb, there's nothing listed, but that's a lot of actors right now that are active, don't have anything on their IMDb. And I think that's all because of, again, the environment that we're living in, and, you know, who knows what he has signed on to do with other films that are, you know, under wraps, any other things. I mean, Fast and Furious, of course, he showed up in. Mr. Nobody, or I forget what his character name was in that. I wouldn't be surprised if he continues acting, but I'm sure it's going to be in a much smaller scale. I don't think we'll see him do anything like Hateful Eight or anything like epic like that again. But The Christmas Chronicles is a perfect fit for him and Goldie. In addition, they're already talking, they haven't confirmed it yet, but A Christmas Chronicles 3, I think Netflix is looking at this as a great little holiday edition, especially when it's like really family friendly. Of course, they haven't released any of the numbers, but I think the first rendition, the first Chronicles, did like 20 million views. So I don't know if that's good. I don't know if that's bad, but I mean, it's still impressive. Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's hard to really put any substance in these numbers because you don't know, well, okay, so how many subscribers are there on Netflix? How many of those are active? How many, you know, there's just so many variables to that. And how does that break down financially for money? So I don't know. It's 20 million views. I guess that's impressive. I mean, put that on YouTube and you'd be an instant hit, right? And that's like within the first week of the Chronicles being posted up. So they haven't released any numbers or anything for Christmas Chronicles 2 yet, of course, because it just landed. So we'll see. But by all means, check it out. I enjoyed the shit out of it. I'll probably watch it again just because it's now going to be part of the Christmas fold. Because, you know, you have your Christmas films. And, of course, my next one on deck that I have to actually pull out my VCR for, my VHS, is A Wish for Wings That Work. It's a Bloom County Opus and Bill the Cat adventure with Santa. It's perfect. I love it. I watch it every year. And then I think Love Actually. Is that the one with Keira Knightley and Bill Nye? And yeah, the creepy scene where Andrew Lincoln is holding up signs to the Keira Knightley. Yeah, a little creepy, but it's a great, great movie. Very, very Christmassy. It's perfect. But anyway, we'll talk about what's coming up for Christmas later. Yeah, what else? Oh, ooh. I don't know. Okay, so as of me going on, this just landed, and I haven't really, like, processed it yet, but okay, let me just read this to you. The second Sonic the Hedgehog movie is currently set to release on April 8th of 2022. So evidently, they have decided they're going to do it and have already worked on some of the production and are going forward with another Sonic the Hedgehog film. Okay. I guess. I don't know. I'm glad that I think a lot of the success to this film is that they listened to the fans and gave them exactly what they wanted. Sometimes the fans are right. And of course the Sonic, you know, images, and we talked about this at length when it first broke last year, of how bad the CGI for Sonic looked, and it was absolutely atrocious. So them going back and fixing it, I think, saved the film. It wasn't as creepy. But is it a good film? I mean, I've kind of watched a little bit of it. I haven't really, like, sat down and like watched it. I know right now it's available on Blu-ray and DVD, and you can purchase it at home. I just, I'm not really bought in. I never was like a big Sonic fan for my Sega system. It was fun. I just got bored with it because all you do is just run around and collect rings. And they do kind of address it. It is a fun film. It's definitely family friendly and something that you want to see. And it brings back a little bit of the nostalgia. But already with them saying that they're doing a second one and they're already in production, is encouraging, I guess. I mean, it was fun, and it's worth a revisit for a sequel. I'm surprised we're getting this, honestly, before the next Pokemon. Like, Detective Pikachu, I thought absolutely killed it and would have been, you know, first up before doing another Sonic. So, but Jim Carrey's Dr. Robotnik definitely fits. He's definitely creepy and way over the top. Exactly what I would expect Robotnik to be. Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Also over the weekend, this landed on the 29th, just a few days ago. The big final, finally we get it. The new trailer for Doctor Who, Revolution of the Daleks. And it... it is something nobody expected. Of course, Mr. Big is back. Yay! Where are my Sex and the City fans? Mr. Big is back, and the trailer at long last brings a character that I think everyone would be absolutely in love with coming back to Doctor Who, and that is Captain Jack Harkness. Yes, that is right. Captain Jack is back for the holiday special. I don't know if you can call it holiday special. It is slated to come out January 1st, so New Year's Day of 2021. We'll bring in the new Doctor, a new episode of the Doctor. Not a new Doctor. Don't misquote me on that. And you know, I'm excited. I really am. I'm anxious to get moving on with something a little more familiar for the Doctor, and bringing in Captain Jack is definitely that. And I think this production team learned what the first production team did, and that is you can't ignore the villains of the past. You have to keep, you know, a steady new villains, new creatures, always fine. But I think you have to have a well balance of both. And I think the production team has finally come to that conclusion where, okay, we're going to bring in some oldies but goodies. And that's fine. Too little, too late. I don't know. I'll talk about that in a second. But Captain Jack coming back against the Daleks is absolutely perfect. This is what the show needs. It needs a little comfort. It needs the loving arms of Captain Jack, and I can't wait to see him interact with Jodie Whittaker's Doctor. And that's popcorn material right there. Just sit back and watch the show. That is absolutely going to be perfect. So with Captain Jack back, the trailer we put up on the Facebook page, so check it out. It's quick. It's not anything extensive. It doesn't give us a whole lot of reveals. It gives us a new-looking Dalek that the production team says is not going to be a permanent new Dalek moving forward. So evidently this one is just episode contained, however that works. And, of course, everyone's asking, how is this going to work? Because when we talked about this, you know, in length, and I'm not going to bore you with it, but, you know, what happens to the other two companions? Vaz stays on. Will you know, Captain Jack stay? Is this something going forward? And, of course, in a new article with Jodie Whittaker, she even says she does not, she's not prepared to give up the Doctor role. In fact, she is not even looking for any other gigs right now. She just wants to focus solely on being the Doctor. So, you know what? I applaud her for that. And she's done a good job. But unfortunately, like Matt Smith's Doctor, she is suffering from some seriously inept writing. I mean, I don't want to say, I hate to put it that way, but it really is. I mean, great. I have no problems with the female doctor. I have no, I don't even look at it that way. She is the doctor. They regenerate. I get it. Let's move past that. Let's actually focus on what the problem is, and that is just subpar writing. And I hate to put it that way, but there really just isn't any other approach. And then a lot of the other people that I talk to about the Doctor Who stuff, a lot of them are actually in agreement with me, and they're just fed up. Some have actually even just walked away, and they're like, well, you know, tell me when this mess is over and I can come back to watching Doctor Who. And I think bringing back some of the classic monsters is the best choice and the best thing that they could do for the series. Oh, sorry. So I think this is the first step to solidifying at least maybe a better run at it with stories, better run with it at with what's going on. We'll see. I mean, we're going into what this is the third season with Jodie as the Doctor, and everything the Time Lord Victoria storyline has been really a nail biter. Really enjoying that, especially with like some of the novels that have come out in the comics. I haven't picked up any of the audio adventures yet, but gotta pace it. There's so much crap out there. It's like, holy crap. And they have like stuck to the schedule. It's like boom, boom, boom. So any Doctor Who fans out there disagree with me, I'd love to talk about it, because maybe I'm wrong, but just overall, just get some better writers. I'm missing some good Doctor Who, some classic Doctor Who. Maybe that's what I just need. Go revisit some of the old stuff. Yeah, you know, just as a thing. Speaking of returning, this kind of gave me hope, especially with everything that's going on right now. But Diggle is slated to return for 5 episodes in a multi-show run. The actor David Ramsey, who plays Diggle in the Arrowverse, is not only coming back to reprise his role as Diggle, but he's also directing some of the episodes. A few of them, Superman and Lois, Batwoman, and The Flash are the episodes that he's going to be directing and also, I'm sure, appearing in. The question, the question is, will we get Green Lantern? Will we get the John Stewart, quote-unquote, Green Lantern that everyone's been speculating, that even DC has toyed with, especially during Crisis? We get, you know, Wesley Shipp's Flash of, where's your ring, you know? So maybe we'll see it. It will be, who knows? I'm just glad that they're at least putting out something positive for the Arrowverse, especially with them canceling Black Lightning, which I really think is extremely bad idea. And, of course, Supergirl getting unplugged. I mean, yeah, vanilla, but still, you know, it was kind of fun. I mean, I know we don't need two cape, you know, supers, but I'm still not sold on Superman and Lois, to be honest with you. I haven't seen anything on it, and everything I've heard is just kind of like, me. The only thing I'm pleading to the powers that be, keep John Cryer as Lex Luthor. That's probably one of the greatest things that you guys have done, and I was hesitant at first. I did not see that coming, of how good Cryer would be as Luthor. Absolutely, hands down, one of the best Luthers next to Gene Hackman. Yeah, I'm gonna say that. Yep, going on the record for that one. Brilliant. So with David coming back as a director and what the fates may have in store for Diggle is anyone's guess. Who knows? Just the potential, just the actual thought of it could happening. And this is, of course, coming from a Green Lantern fan. I know that everyone else is just kind of like, eh, whatever, it's Diggle. But there's just so many similarities from, like, classic, you know, Green Lantern, Green Arrow teaming up, that, you know, the whole time that Arrow was around, Diggle was there with him, so kind of like Hal and Ollie from the comic books palling around. Of course, he didn't have his ring, but it just kind of had that warm, fuzzy feel from comics back in the day. It was just kind of fun, and I think he's earned the ring. For fuck's sake, just give it to him. He should have gotten it a long, long time ago, but no. Whatever. Give him a ring, please. Just saying. That's just my opinion. I could be wrong. So moving on from the weird to the absolutely strange. I'm not sold on this story, and I'm just you can tell it's a slow news day when this catches my eye, because normally I don't buy into the fan hype and all of this, but over the last few days, a mysterious monolith has appeared out in Utah. And of course, now everyone is claiming that they've solved the mystery, that it's not some prank, but in fact, it is a prop that that was actually used in Westworld's filming, and basically just kind of got forgotten by the crew. So it appeared somewhere in August 2015 and October 2016 on the show. So that's when HBO was out there filming for Westworld. Maybe? I don't know. I mean, I've seen some memes pop up on this, which are actually more entertaining than the story. I mean, it looks just like a silver monolith. And of course, I right away think of like the Power of Three Doctor Who episodes with the little black cubes that suddenly appear. And I'm like, oh, great. Now it's a gateway to show up. So I don't know if I'm buying this, because it's just, come on. It's a little too hokey, too ridiculous. It's in the middle of nowhere, and then all of a sudden it's just discovered. Eh, prank. Maybe. But here's the funny thing. I'm all for a good mystery. So this kind of fits that thing. Because the monolith in Utah, mysteriously now, as it appeared, has now disappeared. Like its owner said, oh, oops, my bad. Let me go get that for you. So as soon as it disappears, it has now reappeared in Romania. Now, whether it's the same monolith or a different one remains to be seen. No one has touched it. How does it just suddenly disappear? Especially if everybody's looking at it in Utah and all of a sudden it's just gone to reappearing in Romania. So I'm very, very curious. I don't know how long it'll stay in Romania, where it's going to go next. I really want to make t-shirts of like the monolith tour, which I think would be hilarious. Just a black concert t-shirt with the monolith on the front and on the back, just places it appeared. Just because I honestly, this just seems like a PR promotion of some kind for a new film. Maybe this is HBO fucking with people for the next season of Westworld. I don't know, because that would make more sense to me than aliens or anything along those lines, because that's just crazy talk, right? I don't know. But then how does it just suddenly appear? And the image of it in Romania is as isolated as where it is in Utah, or was in Utah. So the mystery continues. I'm waiting to see what the internet produces now as far as what this monolith could be part of. I don't know. Because if the one in Utah was from Westworld and filming there, then how do you explain the one now in Romania? What's it going there? Maybe it's the Time Bandits. Maybe they're just, you know, trying to figure out the gates. Who knows? Where this story ends, I will be kind of curious just to see the final of it, because just getting people wound up about it. It reminds me of the creepy clown from a few years ago that just would show up in like different videos and images over was it Wisconsin? I don't know, because he started following me soon after that on Twitter when I started talking about him. So I was just like, ooh, creepy. The clown is coming for me. So if maybe I'm talking about the monolith, now maybe the monolith will appear in my backyard. That would be... Now that's a trick. Impress me, monolith. Show up in my backyard. I got a nice little spot for you out there. Sit next to the bench. It'll be fun. I like it. As we get more monolith information, I'll let you know. And I'm going to see about creating my Monolith Rock t-shirt. Moving on. Speaking of things that you probably want to go see, book your plans now, because I have a feeling this is going to sell out quickly. On February 4th, 2021, Universal Studios Japan is opening up Super Nintendo theme park. Super Nintendo World is being built on, I guess, the ashes of the original Universal Studios in Japan. I think, why did it take this long to get a Super Nintendo park? I don't know. Nintendo probably just dragging their feet, not sure what they want to do. But what they have in store for fans looks particularly tasty. I mean, to begin with, I've always wanted to visit Japan. So this makes it even more compelling. But what they spent on this park is mind-blowing. I mean, I was already kind of, you know, like in awestruck as far as like some of the new stadiums that we've built here, but Super Nintendo World, they spent $580 million building, which, holy crap, that is a ton of cash. And I'm sure that they'll probably make that all back in the first weekend. No, I'm just kidding. but the park has got three major attractions, and the first one is called Super Mario Kart Koopa's Challenge, and it's expected to be a real-life version of Mario Kart. So I sign me up. I mean, we already had like Mario Kart here in Colorado, and it was kind of like a watered-down version, but I can imagine if they've spent this kind of money, what this ride looks like, especially if you're able to battle with Koopa shells. I want to play. Let me go. I want to go. The second ride is called Yoshi's Adventure, and will take riders on a journey through Yoshi's Island. The family-friendly ride will offer a great view of the Mushroom Kingdom while adventurers search for three mysterious eggs. And you know what? That's perfect. I can see where this is going, especially with Nintendo always, you know, pushing for healthy and out on the move and being, you know, active. So this actually would probably be kind of fun, because you always, you know, run out of things to do for the little ones. They can't do on all the rides. And I'm sure as they expand rides, this will, you know, probably be a second thought. But at least right now with only three rides, this would be kind of fun, because the third experience involves the use of power-up bands that will allow visitors to take on challenges and collect virtual coins and items. With the use of these bands, fans can play interactive games throughout the park, including a journey to help Peach recover the golden mushroom and the final boss battle against Bowser Jr. That absolutely put me down for it. It kind of sounds a little like they're taking the technology from Harry Potter, because you've got the wands that you can go get at Ollivander's, and as you visit different places in Harry Potter's world, there you can cast spells, and by moving the wand in the right direction, things you can interact with different environments in the world, which is fun. So it looks like they've taken that aspect and just have added a little better element and more to it. So this is absolutely perfect. I'm totally on board for this. I wasn't planning a trip to Japan anytime soon, but why can't we have this? Of course, our Universals here in the States might be a little, you know, constricted on space. Who knows? But I definitely want to do this. They are saying that entry tickets, you do need to purchase in advance. Advance booking through the Universal Studios Japan app is the best way to go. I didn't look to see what a pass costs. In fact, let me check. So right now, according to the Super Nintendo page, it looks like the park is actually going to be open 8:30 and 9:30, closing between 7 and 9 p.m., so they're still kind of working on the hours. But typically, what they're saying right now, cost between 2,500 yen and 7,315 yen. Express passes and VIP wristbands are also available, allowing you to bypass lines. So the same thing that they have for like Disney and Universal with the Fast Pass. But a conversion right now with current market, 2,500 yen equals $23.96 U.S. dollars. So for $25. You can go to Nintendo Land and be involved in a lifelike video game experience. That is absolutely stupendous. I am in. Of course, the bulk of the money that you're going to burn on getting to Japan might balance that out a little bit more. But as far as theme parks go, I'm in. We need a roller coaster. There's so much they can do with this. I'm in. I really want to see this. But that's as of right now. So $23.96 is what 2,500 yen converts over to. So well worth the money, if you ask me. In fact, I feel like I'm taking advantage of somebody at that price. But get your tickets booked now. And be one of the first. February 4th is right around the corner, and I'm guaranteeing you could use a vacation after this year. So there you go. In comic book news, this week actually is got a great book that I want to kind of bring up just because of the nostalgia and everything attached to it. This is actually hitting shelves this week. Batman and Catwoman number one. It's under the DC Black Label. So usually the Black Label is a little more grittier, a little more grounded. I know it's kind of hard to say that with, you know, how normal DC comics are. But they definitely explore some darker stories. But overall, I've liked what the DC Black Label has done and accomplished, and I'm hooked. It's great. So, with the bringabout of Batman and Catwoman number one, it's, you know, finally, I guess, the honeymoon for Batman and Catwoman as Bruce and Selina get comfy being a couple. So how this fits into continuity, basically, I believe, is like right after the Joker War. The significance of this and why I think this is going to be such a hot book is they're finally bringing about the Mask of the Phantasm character into canon. So back in the late 90s, I think is when this film came out, Mask of the Phantasm was the animated series, the film that was, wow, loved it. Of course, the first time the animated series had a film up there, Mask of the Phantasm, basically what we're looking at is a person, Andrea Beaumont, returns to Gotham City to avenge how her family was treated by the underworld of Gotham, in addition to kind of exploring an early love interest for Bruce as he's becoming Batman, and the conflict between Bruce and Batman and his mission. So it's actually a really great story, and I really love the Phantasm character. In fact, you know, the figure was a pain in the ass to find when it was first released. Then, of course, the new animated series figure line came out, had to pick it up, and well worth it. So awesome. But it's never really been kind of you know, focused on. It's always been part of the animated series, just as, like, Harley was never really acknowledged until they finally just brought her into the fold. So they're finally doing the same for Mask of the Phantasm. So this story with Batman and Catwoman alludes to the events of that film and why Andrea Beaumont is now returning back to Gotham after all of this time. So there's a conversation that Batman and Catwoman have in regards to the story. I don't want to ruin anything for anybody, but Batman, Catwoman, number one, absolutely worth picking up, I think, from both the nostalgia and the significance, especially when you look at what, like, Catwoman coming over to... Harley coming over to canon, that has led to an incredible run of comics and, you know, one of the hotter characters for DC in ages. I don't know if this is going to have the same impact as far as Mask of the Phantasm and the Phantasm character. I mean, it's kind of cool as, you know, villain of the week, and I wouldn't be surprised if we wouldn't see a modified Phantasm out of this. Maybe, you know, they update the character. I thought the character was fine the way it was conceived in the animated series. So we'll see. But definitely, I think as a speculator, in addition to, as, you know, just from the nostalgia and the fun of the film, this definitely needs to be picked up. Added to the collection for show. So, there you have it. A brief rundown as far as stories that have caught my eye. If you didn't get the chance, I appeared on Collector's Corner for Allsies Comics podcast on Saturday. Kind of a fun interview, sitting down, talking about all things in the way of collectibles with James and his crew over there. Check it out. It was a fun little podcast. It's interesting to be on the other side of the mic, and just, you know, being interviewed instead of, you know, interviewing someone. Of course, the purpose of the interview was to talk about this coming weekend's Feeding Denver's Hungry. We are doing our annual toy and food drive, where everything we raise goes to benefit Feeding Denver's Hungry for the Christmas season and the dispersion of toys and food. We want to make sure that every kid through the line gets a toy. So if you can, please show up Saturday, December 5th. That will be out there. It'll be a contactless experience. You can drive through a Ghostbuster, a Sith Lord, a Sailor Scout, a Starfleet officer, maybe even Batman or a Mandalorian. Can remove your donated items from the car contact free. Ghostbusters will be in force, of course. Whatever we can do to help people in need is kind of what we're doing for this approach. And of course, we want everyone to feel comfortable and safe, hence why we're doing the contactless delivery system. So all you have to do is pull up, open up the door, we'll take out the items. It'll be perfect. In addition to that, you can drive by, see Geek Garage will be there in full force with, I think, what we've heard is 7 different fan-inspired vehicles, maybe more. Of course, the Ecto will be on display in addition to whatever Geek Garage is going to bring along for the day. We want to help as many we can. Feeding Denver's Hungry did let us know that they did cap it at 1,400 people who had signed up in advance, because we want to make sure that the kids get age-appropriate toys. So there will be a sorting system that goes in place. If you want, you can check our website out. We do have a place that, if you can't make the event on the 5th, that you can drop off a donation, whether it be at Time Warp Comics in Boulder, Allsies Collectibles out in Aurora Embassy Suites in Denver, and I'm forgetting somebody. Yes, just go to the page. I can't believe I'm forgetting everybody all of a sudden. Brain locked up. But check out Allsies or Time Warp, opposite ends of town. Easy and convenient. I know we had boxes set up at Outworld as well as 3070 Sports Bar, which with the recent lockdowns may be a little bit more difficult than the comic book shops, and of course the dental office that is located off of Kipling? No. Wadsworth. They are also offering a 10% discount on services if you make a donation. So they're helping us as well. So do what you can. Help as you may. We understand everybody is suffering. So by all means, I can't say this enough. Just want to make sure we help some kids, because it's Christmas and every kid should have a toy for Christmas, and nobody should go hungry, which is kind of, you know, Feeding Denver's Hungry's motto. So check them out. And of course, our sponsor, Suzy Q's, go over and check them out on Instagram and her webpage, in addition to Facebook. So I guess that kind of wraps up this week's. I know I was looking for more information, more news, but with the holiday weekend, I can understand it. There's not a lot out there right now, so we just want to close out the year, I think, is everybody's mantra right now. Just let's end 2020. Just look into 2021. Here we come. So in the meantime, if you have any problems, questions, or comments, please put them in the field below. Send me a direct message. I'm always available. In the meantime, run fast, laugh hard, and always be kind.